Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. You guys can find me on Twitter at Davis Maddock. And I am joined by my buddy, who's actually just on my other podcast, The Take Cast, Ben Gretsch, because I want to have some people on this show who disagree with me a little bit, Ben. And you are team Combine is overrated.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, definitely for receivers. Like, I think it's like the opposite of useful. We should probably look at guys that are falling specifically because of the combine and target them.
That is so you could not say anything that is more antithetical to how I approach drafting dynasty rookies than guys who fall because of bad combines are good values. And for sure, you will, if you go back and you look at a history of the NFL draft, you look at a history of the combine and who has done what, you'll find loads of Philip Dorsett's, John Baldwin's, AJ Jenkins, these guys who came in, weighed 220 pounds, ran 4.3 flat 40s and sucked, right?
Yeah.
I think that obviously the solver there was lack of college production. Every guy I just mentioned, and they're just all really popular examples, they were all non-productive in college. But what do you do with the KJ Hill guy who was okay? You know, he was kind of relatively productive for an Ohio State wide receiver, but he was just horrible at the combine, and he's going to be like a fifth round pick.
I just probably won't.
Yeah, he just doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But so here's the thing though, film Twitter loves that guy. The example from last year, Kelvin Harmon. Harmon.
I hated Kelvin Harmon last year. Me.
So, yeah, I hated Kelvin Harmon too. And I liked him before because he was productive at a young age at North Carolina State, right? And then he had a bad final season. And then he came out. I think he had a bad final season and then early declared anyway. And then was so bad at the combine. You know, even as late as July, he was still going in the first round of rookie drafts, Kelvin Harmon was.
Yeah, and that was because people loved, a couple highlight reel plays. It's the same, very similar thing to Doxson. And, there's obviously,
Oh, man, Josh Doxson.
Yeah, things on the analytical side where you could say that there's, kind of leaks that we lean too heavily on certain, metrics or certain features. But as soon as you see a guy who's not really well known and film guys are like, this guy should be going way better because look at these highlight plays he's made. That guy's going to be
That guy's overvalued.
Yeah, he's immediately going to be overvalued. And the reason is, the way that I've always thought of it is, consistency at the wide receiver position is so much more important than the ability to do something phenomenal one time.
For fantasy, maybe even not yes. for okay, it was JJ, late round quarterback, that I was talking to a couple weeks ago, and he said, NFL scouts, they might be looking at Henry Ruggs like a first round draft pick, because he's going to clear space out for everyone else, very similar to DeSean Jackson, but maybe he won't ever be that good for our fantasy teams because he's only going to see 110 targets a year. And I started thinking about that, and I was like, yeah, the job of an NFL wide receiver is not always to score 250 PPR points.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's totally true. And I think the speedsters that can stretch the top off defenses are kind of their own class, because there's not really any other type of receiver that can add so much value to the offense, but not really in fantasy. Like no slot guys doing that. You know what I mean? They're either productive, they're catching passes, or they're not. But yeah, I mean, guys that when I say consistency, it's snap in, snap out. It's the ability to every single snap in a game, get open, create separation, draw targets, right? Like, I'm someone who believes that targets are a measure of skill. Like, that's
targets are an indicator of quality.
Yeah. And I think that's what I look for. Like, the guys Keenan Allen always pops right to my head. Like, okay, he ran a horrible 40 and all these things, but he had so many innate abilities that don't show up in the combine. Particularly, he's an amazing route runner. Like, we all know that now.
Well, and he was very productive in a horrible situation in college, very similar to Jalen Reagor. And so I totally The combine stuff matters because it's really predictive of draft position. And the best argument, and I believe that this is the Sean Siegel argument, and something we talked about in the show last week a little bit as well, which is just that it gets double counted. When your model is weighting draft position and it's weighting combine stuff, you are double counting that, because guys who have bad combines do not get drafted highly, and guys who have unexpectedly good combines get drafted. Wait, like Chase Claypool just went from being an undrafted free agent to, if he went with the 48th pick of the NFL draft, you wouldn't jump out of your seat. You'd be like, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, because everything's relative to draft position. Like, that is first and foremost, that's going to determine who plays, who gets opportunity. And we're trying to figure out guys that are going to either over or underperform their draft position in the actual draft.
So I want to go through, I actually just today, Wednesday, March 4th, I went and redid my post-combine rookie rankings, and these are a couple of guys who I expect to be different from the industry. So I think that these are guys that are going to be either higher or lower by a few spots than industry standard. Henry Ruggs at 10, too high, too low, just right for dynasty rookie rankings.
10 overall, not wide receiver 10, right?
10 overall. So that's after Jalen Reagor, that's after Denzel Mims, and that's after T. Higgins.
Yeah, so I think, like, you hear 10 and you're like, oh, that makes sense for him. But when you actually sit and look at the 2020 class, there's definitely 10 guys that I want ahead of Ruggs.
Yeah.
It's too high.
Like, I think there's an argument for Justin Jefferson, who had a really good combine and might get drafted really highly. If Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Clyde Edwards-Helaire had a bad combine in the sense that people were talking about him as one of the elite running backs in the class. I think that his combine was poor enough that he is now David Montgomery, right? Like, which is a fine player, but it's not a guy that a team's going to take in the top 50 picks.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, maybe they will. I don't know. Maybe they will.
Montgomery's like a worst case, I would say. I still like him, but another guy that I would take over Ruggs, I think, is interesting, is Laviska Shenault from Colorado. Like, that's a dude that was super productive in year two, and then in year three his stats went backwards. He had a bad combine, though. That's a guy,
but if you want to be sharp, though, yeah, he was hurt, and I talked about this on the Breakout Finder podcast, because I really like players like Shenault now more than I did, you know, 5 years ago, where, like, oh, you know, they're going to use him at, he's going to play slot and boundary wide receiver. Maybe he'll take a couple snaps in the backfield. And at Colorado, he was like their goal line back. He would take like wildcat snaps on the goal line. And like, that probably used to would have been a thing we would have like made fun of prospects for. Like, we would have like made fun of like Dexter McCluster and Denard Robinson for doing that stuff. But because so many more offenses are using packages like that all the time, that player is more valuable. So maybe while we're here, maybe I will move Shenault up. I have him first pick of the second round right now, 13th for me in rookies right now, but maybe that's too low.
That's too low for me. I would have him in the first round for sure. I mean, it depends where he goes, but I think he's someone who could fall a little bit in the real draft, because, like, I don't know if people will really buy that he was hurt. You know, they'll look at his 40.
I certainly don't buy that Zach Moss was hurt. Zach Moss ran, I think, a 4.75 40. I don't buy it. I think that Zach Moss, like, Zach Moss is, there certainly is a good argument that he is going to be the Kelvin Harmon of, he played in a really bad conference and was like, I mean, sure, Zach Moss was productive enough. It's not like he was bad in college, but I just, guys who run 4.7s are generally not NFL players.
People love him, right?
Dude. Well, this is what happens. Every running back that's not fast gets comped to Kareem Hunt. So Zach Moss is the 2020 Kareem Hunt. That's the film take on him.
Before him, it was Devonta Freeman, and there's like a couple, you know, a couple examples of this, but over a larger sample, like, the elite backs are all pretty darn fast and athletic. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's actually, while we're talking about the combine, that is a good point. Guys who are, like, if you're trying to find sleepers or break ties amongst third round rookie draft picks and stuff, you're going to just do so much better off taking guys who are sick athletes in that range, as opposed to Zach Moss, you know, Benny Snell, guys like that. Okay. Opposite of Zach Moss, AJ Dillon. This is okay. This is really high relative. I moved him all the way up to 15th overall. So obviously, if we think he's not going to get drafted high, this is just absolute lunacy. I think that combine just, I think that combine basically put him in the NFL's mind equal to Akers, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Like, I think he'll go top 100 pretty easily.
Yeah, guys like this, I mean, I'm going to wait and see on draft position. You know, I have a league that does a rookie draft before the
draft. I do as well.
And I would speculate what you just said, that he's going to go, like, running a 4.53 at almost 250 pounds, like, he's going to probably
And he had,
go.
Like, a 46-inch vertical jump, too, or something crazy like that.
Yeah, super athletic at that size. So, yeah, he's probably going to – someone's going to fall in love with him for sure.
Yeah, he is the highest spark score running back of the class. Actually, a lot of people who listen to the show probably don't even know about Zach Whitman's website, Three Sigma Athlete. But this is like I have always used his stuff to identify like uber athletic, you know, guys to take a little bit later on in rookie drafts, because you will find names in here that you're not gonna find. In other stuff, just from looking at straight 40 times, like an example of a guy who I am likely going to be speculating on a little bit in rookie drafts, maybe fourth, fifth round type stuff this year, is Tyree Cleveland out of Florida. He had a higher spark score than Michael Pittman, Antonio Gibson, Justin Jefferson. Not very productive at Florida, but I mean, Florida was a terrible football program when he was there. Like, I like to take risks on guys like that.
But that... that's the exact opposite of what I would do.
Right, that's the exact opposite of your strategy.
Yeah,
right.
Literally the exact opposite. In the late rounds, I would take a risk at wide receiver. It's different at running back. I agree with you that, you know, taking a shot on an elite athlete running back in this, you know, third round of rookie drafts is like, that's, I think, the high upside play for sure. But when I'm looking at receivers in the third rounds of rookie drafts, I'm always looking at guys that have a proven production record, because like,
Colin Johnson, Devin, the Texas guy, like he led them in receptions every single year he played there. Actually got outshone by his teammate Devin Duvernay at the combine. I mean, Colin Johnson is going to be free in rookie drafts.
Yeah, exactly. That's like definitely the type of guy. I mean, isn't Gandy Golden a pretty, like, I haven't even dug into this a ton.
No, Gandy Golden was like, it kind of depends on what numbers you use in terms of like, oh, did this guy have a good combine or not? Actually kind of the same for Rager. People were disappointed that Rager was not as fast or whatever, but when Rager weighed in at 210 pounds, I was like, oh, this guy might go in the first round. Cause like, you can't like, unless you're the Ravens, you're not drafting a 180-pound wide receiver in the first round. It just doesn't really happen.
For Gandy Golden, I was talking about production. Like, he's going to be a little bit of a later pick, right, but a very productive guy. It's small school, but, like, super, super productive.
Yeah, 40% dominator rating.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the kind of guy that, like, okay, yeah, I'll take a chance on a small school guy that was really productive.
I have Gandy Golden higher than Brandon Ayuk, higher than Michael Pittman, higher than KJ Hamler. I have him at 16th overall because I even the small school production, I value that stuff so much more. And for me, I like guys Gandy Golden size, because there are, as the NFL like moves towards a lot of these, you know, smaller players and stuff, there are just less guys like Gandy Golden who play the wide receiver position. So, yeah, what's your official stance on Denzel Mims? I moved him way up because I liked him before anyways. Like, I thought he was a good productive player anyways, but he was the biggest winner of the combine of any player, I think.
Yeah, no, so, like, this is where you get into the issue of double counting, though.
And double counting.
There's two types of double counting. One, like, this is going to improve his draft stock, but also, like, the reason I think production, like, people have a hard time with the athlete numbers, in my opinion, with receivers. If production is this predictive, there's a reason for it, right? And it means that whatever the player's physical skills are, he knows how to use them. There are athletes that can't produce, but, like, we learn these numbers, and I don't want to double count this because what we learned is this guy's a really great athlete, but we also already knew that he had translated that into production, right? Like, so it's not like he was very productive and he's a great athlete. He's productive because he's a great athlete. That's how he wins. So I don't really want to double count that. I already did like him, though, because he's a very good, you know, dominator rating, breakout age, strong production record for him.
Where are you valuing the quarterbacks in this class? I have I have Burrow as like a second tier, so like somewhere in between picks 12 and 16, I think is a good range for Burrow. And then I have both Tua and Jalen Hurts in my third tier, which is like beginning of like second round to third round. Like I think those guys should be gone by pick 30, basically, in most rookie drafts.
That's obviously a little bit aggressive for Hurts, but I know you love him. But like
I can't help it.
For me, like, I don't even widen up ranking quarterbacks in my overall rankings because it's so specific to your league, right? Like, if you need like a quarterback, it doesn't, you
if
can you're, go.
If you play in a lot of super flex leagues, you're going to be super hyper aware of it. If you play in 20 leagues and none of them are super flex, like, you don't care. Like, it just doesn't matter.
If you have a bunch of aging quarterbacks, like, I most of my startups, I take quarterbacks really late, and then my quarterback room in my team in, like, yeah, 2 to 3 years is dead. Yeah, so, yeah. Like... Then yeah, I would take Burrow in the 12 to 16 range, like you said, if I had a chance to get him, and I needed a long term quarterback, but I still won't overpay for him, you know.
Yeah, so I think another really well, this is a huge debate this year is who do you think should go first overall, Jonathan Taylor or DeAndre Swift?
I think it's no question it's Taylor.
Like, what are people doing with DeAndre Swift?
I don't understand. This is a, like, people are mad that Taylor had so much work. Like, that's a problem. Like, why are you still, like, my question would be, like, why are you still drafting, like, Ezekiel Elliott in the first round of fantasy drafts? Because he had a ton of work over his first few NFL seasons, and that's got to be more, you know, more painful. You're taking bigger shots from better athletes and, like, getting tackled more. Jonathan Taylor's just running away from people in college. Like, I'm not concerned about his workload. In fact, it's a positive. Christian McCaffrey had one of the biggest workloads. It's the reason people pushed him down, and he's the
He was superstar. A stone cold workhorse, and he just has kept doing it in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's a positive thing that this dude has handled this much work at the college level and has been able to stay healthy. And he's an elite athlete. There's no question in my mind this guy's the number one pick.
I would say that most of the RotoViz work and this stuff, which is where, and people should not get this mistaken. Most of what people believe and say about prospects, if it's based in data, it came from someone at RotoViz at some point along the road. That's just kind of the way that research into this stuff works. And, you know, I believe that most of what they have found has been, it's just been super high signal ratio for the more touches a guy gets in college, the more likely it is that they are going to produce right away. And I think Jonathan Taylor, better prospect than Josh Jacobs, who was kind of the unanimous first overall. I mean, compare him to Leonard Fournette. Compare Jonathan Taylor to Leonard Fournette, who was also a unanimous first overall pick. It's like it's not even close. You would
better
take
than all those guys, yeah.
Way better. Like, he's not quite Saquon. Because he's not quite like Saquon was like 99th percentile athlete, but Jonathan Taylor is like a 90th percentile athlete and was productive and caught passes. I want him in all my leagues.
Yeah, I mean, if you can get him, you get him. I think there are some slight concerns about his pass blocking, which could end up being a problem. But like, yeah, you compare
God,
him to
God
like,
help me.
You compare him to Josh Jacobs, and you compare him to any of the backs. When I was saying all those backs, any of the backs from last year's class or guys like Fournette in you know, the years before that, I think he's definitely a better prospect personally.
Yeah, like and so if I understand it correctly, the DeAndre Swift stuff is based off of him being like a very good, like he was like the number one recruit coming out of high school, I think. Like it was like a sweepstakes of where he decided to go. And then as a true freshman, he was taking carries away from Todd Gurley and Sony Michel. So I think that is where a lot of it comes from. And I mean, I got to admit, like you watch him and you're like, oh, this guy's really good. Like he's a really good pass catcher. He's really, shifty. What's a good scouting word? He's got great foot frequency. He really does. He's got great foot frequency out there.
Steps.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he does look good doing what, like running back stuff. The issue
How's
is that his hip swivel, I'd rate it like a B plus, like a B plus hip swivel. I think hip swivel is cornerbacks.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe, I don't know. we're the wrong guys. But I just, it's just one of those examples of, it's like take lock. It's like people can't get off. He is still, Swift is still across the industry.
Oh. Like Laquon Treadwell was a dude that, same thing, was a great prospect coming into college, was never productive in college, didn't have a great combine, still went in the first round because people were still convinced that he was an elite prospect because he had been all the way since high school. And it's like,
yeah,
it's okay to move guys. Like, I get that there's got to be guys that are the top running back in their class come out of high school and all that stuff, but it's totally within their range of outcomes that they wind up just being a pretty good prospect
as opposed to
an elite one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, I think it's really hard for people to, like, when they've already put somebody on that tier and in that, like, on that pedestal, in that tier, to move them back down to, like, you know, maybe DeAndre Swift should only be like the sixth player in this draft. And I don't know if that's where I necessarily have him. I'm pretty much like, just go with consensus on stuff.
Yeah. I have him. I have him at third. I moved CD Lamb ahead of him. That was the only thing I did as a result of stuff over the last couple
of
weeks.
And if he gets major draft capital and we know he's going to get, you know, a workhorse role in the NFL, like, he's got to be a top five pick in that.
Well,
probably a top three.
Yeah. And I think that Jonathan Taylor and DeAndre Swift could both be top 24 picks in redraft this year. They could both go in the first two rounds because running back gets thin super fast. Like, Miles Sanders is like a top 15 pick right now. Yeah. And it's super early on and stuff is going to change. But like, Miles Sanders going really early. Leonard Fournette, who like literally no one wants to draft. Like, they're just, if you're out there and you're telling me like, oh dude, I love Leonard Fournette this year. No, you don't. You don't believe it, because Leonard Fournette, not good, plays for a bad team, and like, all it would take would be like 40 target, like 60 of his touches overall to be diverted to Rykel Armstead, Alfred Blue, you know, just doesn't matter, and he's useless basically.
And Jay Gruden is always, he's a passing back. If he doesn't catch 76 balls, like, everyone's like, oh, his touchdowns are going to regress positively, but if he doesn't catch 76 balls again, you're kind of like, now you just have a bad running back.
Yeah. All right, let's see if I have anything else spicy here. Well, so would
the landing spot on these guys matter so much?
Like, if DeAndre Swift
goes to the Chiefs, like, I might draft
him. I might draft him like fourth overall in redraft. Like, right. You just have to do it. Okay, Chase Claypool. Before I tell you where I have him ranked, just give me your thoughts on Chase Claypool, who basically had the best combine that anyone could have had. He's 6'4", 240, ran a 4.42. I mean, his college numbers are not bad. Like, the way people talked about him, you would think that he caught like 8 passes in college. He had 119 targets his final season at Notre Dame, 1,000 yards, 13 receiving touchdowns. Chase Claypool, this is your, the floor is yours.
Yeah, I mean, this is like, I don't even have a long like take on it. This is like a really simple example of a guy that, yes, he was productive, and yes, I probably would have liked him if he didn't absolutely torch the combine, but as soon as he torched the combine and started getting compared to Megatron, I'm a lock to not be into him. Somebody's going to take him before where I would rank him.
You were on a podcast with the person who's, we're, yeah, in a couple.
You will take him before I can.
We are in a couple leagues together, and I can tell you, he's not going to get past. Like, he won't get past me in any second round that I'm in. I'm taking him in the second round.
And
assuming
there's guys that I look at, and I would comparably take over him up until a point where he's gone, and like, that's just the way it works. Like, I'm not going to have him in any leagues.
Yeah, I mean, that's like everyone prioritizes things, you know, the way that they you know, the way that they do it. All right. I mean, do you have any other big rookie takes? Do you have anything spicy?
No, not really.
If you don't, that's okay.
I mean, I like Chenault. I like Rager. I like Jefferson. We talked about those guys. I think those guys are all going to be like later first round picks. And especially if they don't land in great spots, but like, that's exactly what happened to like AJ Brown last year. And I took him in every league, and I'm going to probably continue to take those types of players that are really productive and get knocked down in rookie drafts because of landing spot or because of, you know, I mean, AJ Brown's a great athlete, and I think, you know,
right,
those other guys are good athletes as well. But, you know, if the combine doesn't help them, let's just put it that way, if it doesn't boost them because they didn't break any records, and you can still get, like, you know, anybody like that that's just boring, productive, like, those guys are going to be the most valuable players in the rookie. That's my hot take. Like, that's, I love taking those guys at the back of the first round.
Yeah, you love like boring value picks.
Yeah, I traded those guys
pay off.
Yeah, like nobody, like you have to trade a ton to get into the top five or six picks because everyone's excited to draft those names. But then when you get to the back half of the first round, people will trade you those picks during the draft. You still have to overpay a little bit during the draft, but like that's where I like to jump into drafts and take those types of players.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is pretty reasonable. Okay, I just want you, to give me a thumbs up or thumbs down on some of these guys who are going to be in the back half of the draft. Eno Benjamin.
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up. Okay, thumbs up to Eno Benjamin. Keyshawn Vaughn. Non-productive guy, very good combine, but played for a bad team.
Yeah, thumbs up.
Okay. Donovan Peoples-Jones.
I just got to say, both those guys, like, I'm like, intrigued by them, just like I'm intrigued by any rookie, but, like,
right.
Standing spot and draft capital. Like, at that point with running backs, I want to know where they got drafted and who drafted them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, there is not going to be a position that is more sensitive to draft. It's running backs is draft position is everything, more or less. Like, that's just kind of how you have to think of things. It's just the way it goes.
Yeah. Donovan Peoples-Jones, though. I mean,
Donovan Peoples-Jones.
Really good combine, but probably a thumbs down for me based on where he's going to, you know, wind up going. I don't know if I'm going to grab him in a lot of leagues.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is overall a pretty reasonable. Okay, here's a guy, literally no production. I wonder if I'm going to be the only person who has this guy ranked in their top 40. But Jamichael Hasty, he went to Baylor and he was like an overage prospect, but he was used more as a pass catcher than their other backs, and is like an 80th percentile spark athlete, and he's got cool dreads. There's a name to watch.
You just convinced me. Thumbs up. I mean, a pass catcher? Like, I love pass catching backs. Like, I overpay for pass catching backs.
He had over 30 targets in all three of his seasons as a starter for Baylor.
And he's got dreads and he's a good athlete. Like, yeah, of course.
There we go. I haven't even dug in that deep,
but I know you have. Like, I would expect that from you.
Well, to be honest, a big part of like what I do can't be done until after the combine. So like the last 3 days I've just been spent going through all my spreadsheets and looking at stuff and like Jamichael Hasty.
I don't know how to say
he's the only one. He's the only one I like.
Yeah, he's pretty dope. That's it. I like him too.
So for people who don't know, we're talking about the Missouri tight end who just goes by he just asked people to call him Albert O because his name is so I really can't pronounce it. It's too hard. But this man scored touchdowns like as his job at college. 11, 6, and 6, his three seasons there. He weighs 260 pounds and ran a 4.49. Like, crazy stuff.
Super athletic. He had a great combine. I dig him. I want him. Yeah. I end up going after athletes at tight end more. Like, there's just some college teams that don't use their tight ends. Yeah. And so it's not really like, is he capable or not? I don't know. And then the Cole Kmet guy, I don't know how to say his name either. But I think he from Notre Dame, I think he's pretty interesting too. He's productive.
Yeah. I mean, and production at tight end does end up mattering more than you think it will, right? Like production at tight end does actually – like guys who catch – you know, if you have 150 catches in college as a tight end, like – you generally end up having some sort of role in the NFL.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, it's just always sort of interesting how that stuff works out. All right, man. Do we have any other takes to get off our chest? I kind of just wanted to run through, you know, some quick combine stuff for people who are not sweating it, that close.
Go for it.
Well, I guess the couple things that you need to know is the top tier. Well, actually, let's reverse. Jerry Jeudy, I think did himself some damage at the combine. I think that he cost himself some money. He's like an 18th percentile Spark athlete now. Do you care about that at all? If he still gets drafted, you know, top 20?
Absolutely not.
I think that's a reasonable take.
There's production concerns with him too a little bit, but like we know that Alabama was just so dominant. Like I can't remember who. I think it was Russell Clay. Shout out Russell Clay, who noted that Alabama, like all 11 of their wins were by 19 or more points. Like just absolutely destroyed teams, and that's part of why. Like not only did he was competing with other really good players, you know, obviously you got Devonta Smith who's still there, but Ruggs as well. But like they were winning by so much that they didn't need to play these guys in the second halves, like ever.
Like ever. So, yeah. Like they were never in there. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like, yeah, the production concerns, like I move those down a little bit. I am going to trust scouts kind of just generally being super high on him. And if they're going to move him down, like he still produced, he still put up numbers considering how much he played. And if people are going to move him down because of his combine, like then I'm probably going to be more interested in him relative. I'm not going to move him up because he had a bad combine, but
you will certainly be able to get a cheaper price on him today than you would have before the combine. And CeeDee Lamb is like, there was a debate like CeeDee or Judy, and it's now Lamb for sure. And I guess the other guy that we did not talk about at all was Cam Akers, but Akers is a guy that I like way more than the market, you know, just was a huge, like big time pass catcher at Florida State, you know, caught 30 passes his final season, had at least 18 targets in every year. And he ran a 4.47 at 217 pounds. I think that Akers is like kind of like the secret superstar of this class.
Yeah. He's someone that's going to slip through the cracks. Something like Edwards-Helaire gets like way more talk, it seems like. And someone, yeah. You know, I think I probably have Akers ahead of him, but I don't necessarily think that's how drafts will go.
Yeah. I don't think so either. A couple other guys, Quez Watkins. He actually was more productive. He was actually a more productive college player, but I think every time guys run a sub 4.440, they end up getting, just a couple extra notes on the combine worksheet. So he went to Southern Mississippi, ran a 4.35 and, kind of like a 38% dominator rating. What do you think about these undersized prospects though? Like what does wide receiver weight do for your models? Like, are you paying attention to that stuff at all?
So like back in the day at RotoViz, they showed, why can't I think of, who did the modeling on wide receiver weight back in the day? I feel so bad. I can't remember.
It's probably John Moore.
Yeah, I know he was involved, but there's definitely someone who I'm letting his name slip my mind, but showed that really matters. I think the rule changes, like a lot of that was based on, like that was like 2015, 2016. It was based on earlier, like an earlier atmosphere, because in 2014 they kind of readjusted like illegal contact and a lot of those rules.
It's so different now, the wide receiver position.
And then immediately, yeah. T.Y. Hilton the next year led the NFL in receiving yards. And I think we've seen over the years since then, and there's not enough data to really make a strong case, but it's a more forgiving league now for undersized receivers. So I still think weight matters, especially for touchdown production. And I'm not going to like write it off, but I don't put as much weight into weight in my model.
It used to be something that I sweated really hard. Like I was like, no, this matters a ton. You know, you can't like small wide receivers, yada, yada. And I think that even more so than the rule changes, I think the fact that NFL schemes have changed, like yes. Play calling has changed.
Yeah. That's a huge part of it too. Yeah.
Your number one wide receiver, how many teams' number one wide receiver is the outside guy who's trying to catch passes on the sidelines? You have the Texans with Hopkins, but they move him into the slot. I guess you have Galladay with the Lions. But
I mean,
so
I
many
think
teams,
it's still most teams. There are a lot of teams, you're right, that still send a ton of targets to the slot, which is a point.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Thomas is a slot wide receiver. Yeah. Julio plays in the slot now. Like a lot of these guys, DJ Moore had 1,100 yards last season running nothing but crossing routes out of the slot. That's literally all the guy did, and he just dominated him, like, because that's a really efficient route the way the NFL is efficient.
Even just the fact that somebody like Michael Thomas exists is, I think, a pretty big, like, proof of the change from a decade ago, and especially, like, the 90s, right, in the 00s. Like, that's not how it was. But now we have so many more spread offenses, and there's so many
more guys. You couldn't have run those crossing routes back in the day. You would like a 180-pound wide receiver running those crossing routes, you would just get destroyed.
Not happening. Yeah. And even like the rise of bubble screens, all sorts of things, like ways that, like, jet sweeps that they just, like, these teams are getting the ball in hands of athletes, you know, like Tyreek Hill's another one that they use him so creatively. Obviously not a huge dude, right? Like, not like those types of guys can be better, I think, in today's NFL than they could even a half decade ago, definitely 10, 20 years ago.
For sure. I think it's there, this is not really related to what we're talking about, but there's a lot of, like, conversation right now about how the Chiefs should, like, find a running back in the draft or, like, trade for Christian McCaffrey or something. And I didn't feel like arguing on Twitter the last couple of days for one of the first times in my life, but I just, like, the Chiefs would be actively worse if they got a better running back. Like, the better the Chiefs running back is, the worse they would be as a team, because it would just encourage them to do Patrick Mahomes stuff less.
I mean, that's not a bad take. I don't think it's a wrong take. There's a lot of data that, like, it sounds wrong. It sounds wrong in the same way that, like, saying wide receivers that are athletic, you should, like, not like, because teams are going to overvalue them. But, like, there's a lot of reasons to believe that. Like, we've seen the data that shows that with certain teams that they're more productive when they don't, like, when their elite back gets hurt or isn't on the field because they throw more. Like, that's better for them.
Yeah, and so, like, if you think about Kansas City with Damian Williams, when they throw to the running backs, he just, like, was always open, right? Whereas if they had Christian McCaffrey, they would be running a bunch of awful plays, right? Like, they would just be running a bunch of plays. Not awful, but you'd go from gaining, like, 9 yards a play to gaining, like, 6 yards a play.
I think if you have a pass catcher like Christian McCaffrey in that offense, they would still throw. Like, Andy Reid's one of the coaches that I would trust to still throw. Like, even when he had McCoy and those guys back with the Eagles, and Brian Westbrook was, like, one of the first, like, three down backs, but, like, one of the first guys that, like, he gave you so much value in the passing game. I guess, like, Marshall Faulk was, like, I mean, we can go even further back, Roger Craig and all these dudes, but, like, Marshall Faulk, like, it used to be, like, running backs didn't catch as many passes. And Westbrook is one of these guys that started – is like a more modern running back right. in the day. Reed's been doing that for years. I don't think a good pass-catching back like McCaffrey would, like, ruin their offense. I think it would
– I don't think it would ruin it, but I certainly think that there'd be more, like, 12-play field goal drives where instead of, like, 4-play touchdown drives. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Like, when you lower your average depth of target, you just open yourself up to that. So what do you have we're going on over at CBS these days? You got anything big you're working on?
We're grinding out prospect profiles right now. I'm still doing the XFL stuff, you know, keeping people who want to play XFL DFS informed.
And, dude, it's the best.
Yeah, it's enjoyable.
I not every team is enjoyable. So, there are three good teams. The Battlehawks are good, the Roughnecks are good, and the Renegades are good. When Landry Jones is not throwing interceptions, they're not going to be good this next week with Philip Nelson. But well, those
Jones,
three teams,
I think, might be out for the year.
I read he's only going to be out for 2 weeks.
Okay. Well, maybe that's true.
Which seems questionable because he had an ice wrap on his leg like the size of a killer whale. It was like – also, XFL medical help probably is not super great.
All of it. Like, we're sitting here discussing, you know, how long he's going to be out. We don't have any reporting. We don't know about their medical help. We don't know. We don't even know, like, practice reports. We're just guessing, and it's pretty fun. Like,
and guys show up like, you weren't on the practice report all week, but you're not playing?
Yeah.
Like Elijah Hood a couple weeks in a row?
Elijah Hood, yeah. I mean, I definitely saw something that said that his – MCL was bad enough that he probably wouldn't play the rest of the year. And now that you say that he's only been out 2 weeks, I'm convinced that.
But that could be, but that could
report.
Be wrong though, right? But like
well,
that could
be
that
wrong.
Could just
yeah
that could just be a lie.
We have no idea. We're just guessing.
So, I haven't talked about the XFL at all on this podcast. I think it has staying power. I know that the viewership has gone down, but like the games in St. Louis, they've sold out. Like, and they, I went to one and it was a lot of fun. It was like a ton of fun to go to, and St. Louis is really good. So like, I don't think they're going to have a problem selling tickets, and the players aren't making any money. So it's got to be pretty cost effective for the league.
Yeah. I mean, like, people are already saying like, oh, their attendance is dropping, their TV ratings are dropping, who knows how long this league's gonna last. Like, yeah, the AAF collapsed. I think we have a pretty good feel that the XFL is not gonna do that. Like, they already just saw another league do this last year. Why? Like, they got to make sure they have enough money to run through one season. We have to hope. And I, like you said, like, there are some entertaining teams. I think especially now that like they're getting some more of these like dual threat athletes playing. Like, we saw more BJ Daniels last
year. Once
I'm super excited to see him play more.
Yes. So that's my biggest takeaway is having a mobile quarterback when your offensive line is bad and your players aren't that good is like a cheat code. Like, yeah. PJ Walker and Jordan Ta'amu are completely different levels of player in this league. Not because they're, I mean, PJ Walker is not some like hyper accurate Patrick Mahomes level thrower. It's just that he can move a little bit and doesn't get sacked. I mean, you know, Brandon Silvers and Matt McGloin, like, these guys had no chance because their teammates aren't good enough to get open for every throw, and they're not good enough to not get sacked, so it just is horrible to watch.
Yep. And I wish New York, like, they went to Luis Perez last week and they won and he was all right, but I wish they would have went to Marquise Williams and just played him. Like, just
right.
Let him do things. Like, he was, every time he gets in the game, it's entertaining. Like, and I think it's better for their offense that he's mobile and is, you know, making plays, even if a couple of them are a little bit erratic. Like, let him get his legs.
Well, you're throwing interceptions anyways. You're punting all the time anyways. Like, what does it matter if Marquise Williams takes a couple sacks or fumbles a couple times here or there? If you know, if like he's able to, I don't know, score points. Like, New York got shut out in a game. Like, yeah. It's embarrassing.
Yep. Agreed. Yeah. Tampa needs to go to Quinn and Flowers. All those guys need to start.
Well, he didn't want to be on the team anymore. He requested a trade.
Because they're not playing him, right?
Well, what you just said is really interesting because Taylor Cornelius is like not as good of a passer as Aaron Murray, but just like the fact that he is minuscule mobile. Like, yeah. He can move just a little bit. The Vipers went from being like in week one and week two, like the worst team, to being like, they dunked on, I don't even, who did they play? The LA? Yeah. I don't remember. They dunked on somebody. Yeah, yeah. And it was just because DC, the defenders.
DC.
And and they just did that because they got like semi competent quarterback play, which is very hard to come by in the XFL.
Yeah. Agreed. Like, we gotta get more of these QBs out there. And like, we were talking about DFS, like, part of it does kind of suck that there are only a few really.
Yeah, you just got to stack the roughnecks every week.
Yeah, exactly. That's just kind of annoying, but and like, it makes it tough to differentiate in like the larger tournaments. It's like, okay, we're just stacking the same teams and mixing in like one player from some of the weaker teams and hoping that one player is like has a big game, you know.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, everyone make sure to check out all of Ben's stuff over on CBSSports.com. We also have a podcast going on right now about Omni Fantasy. Ben, give your elevator pitch on Omni Fantasy if the people want to go listen to that right now.
Yeah, it's the futures market meets fantasy drafting. So you draft a bunch of teams instead of players and you across a bunch of different leagues and you wind up with all these bets to and then you get points off who wins championships and who goes far in all the playoffs in all these leagues. So you're not drafting players, you don't have to do a ton of research. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, it is pretty fun. I would encourage everyone to check that podcast out, to check Omni Fantasy out, read Ben's work. If you guys want to get to know Ben more, you think he sounded sharp on the show, Google Ben Gretsch Trap. His articles on running back touches and where they come from on the field is probably one of the best articles that I've read in fantasy football over the last year. I think you guys will really enjoy it, and we will be back next week.